Deadwood Soundwave.
Welcome to Cosmic Void. I'm Biggs.
I'm Xavion.
So today we're doing I, Tonya from 2017. So this movie we've chatted about a little bit.
Yeah.
I was intending on doing it eventually. And then two things happened on the same day. The first thing was I went to the pawn shop last week. I always grab like a bunch of old Blu-rays and I saw it. So I was like, oh, we're talking about doing this at some point. So I grabbed it. And then the second thing was I went home and I read something else completely. And it was talking about how views on feminism has changed. And it was saying that Tonya Harding's been reclaimed as a feminist icon. And I was like, what? And then I realized we need to talk about this movie hardcore.
We do. And mostly because I even just did a side eye. I don't know why. Because I just watched this movie this morning. Well, I watched some of it last night. I've seen this movie. And then this morning I fell asleep, y'all. I slacked. It was a pretty eventful evening the night before, but well worth it.
Yeah. We had the thing for Last Chance Public Radio, fundraiser
that
went over really well, and we all had a good time.
Yeah, we had a good time, but we had a recovery yesterday. And yes. So I was watching the movie, and then like I fell asleep, woke up this morning, and I was like, okay, I'm going to finish it. And then I fell asleep again just because I, you know, was lazy. And then finally I finished it this morning, and I actually got not a lot of research done, but I got some research done as a way of like viewing a lot of things that she's done. I don't know if the movie was really like a feminist thing. You know? Well,
that's okay. That's the thing. I do want to say, I think this ties together in some conversations we've had, and not about any of the movies. They've just veered off into that direction about how a movie comes out. The Blackening, for example, says it was based off a true story that never actually happened.
Exactly.
Right? And we're laughing about that. But that is what this movie is. And they let you know up front. It's Tonya Harding's account and it's Jeff Galluli's account, right?
Yeah.
And they constantly are contradicting each other. They represent that in the movie. But it occurred to me after reading that Tonya Harding has been reclaimed as a feminist icon that like we have to really talk about this up front before we get into the movie, because I want to plainly state she was not a good person. Like,
she really wasn't.
And whether she knew about the attack or not,
she was still allowing it to happen.
She had stuff in the lead up that was not okay. For example, in 1992, a couple weeks after the Olympics, she was in an altercation because she got in a car wreck with this other lady in Portland, and then they traded punches with each other.
What?
She like smashed this lady's glasses, and when the cops came, Tonya Harding was clutching to a bat that she put down, and the lady from Tonya Harding's car said they had traded punches. I mean, like, this is who we're talking about. She is not this icon to be like held up. Like,
she was
abused, and it's not okay, and I understand all of that, but that doesn't make you a good person either. Like,
but also, I was thinking that, and this is about abuse. I don't mind sharing my story, but like, I don't allow my abuse and trauma to like fully take care of my life. And like, there was a lot of times, okay, so for instance, I watched, and I know this will be the ending, but I want to make a point to it. But there's a point where her strap breaks and she.
Oh, her shoelace.
I watched the actual.
Me too.
You did? Okay. And
oh, dude, it was like 94, man. Nobody was not watching it. You know?
And it was embarrassing. And like, but she, a lot of things that she was going through, it was her mom's fault and nothing was ever her fault.
Right.
And it was
from
like
her account.
Exactly. You choose what you do with your life after what we're going to go 16 even. I feel like once you're 16, yeah, you're a teenager. Your parents are showing you the way. But by then you should be knowing who you are. You should be becoming who you are in that way of, okay, this is what I want to do for my career. I'm going to, you know, grow. And I just felt like anything she did as a growth, that was her. Anything happened to her was, it was her abuse. It was not her fault. It was because she's getting her beat. Come on now. Eventually, you can make and break your life.
It seems like in this movie, they posit that Jeff Galooly says that she knew about it, but was dismissive of it. She is maintaining that she knew nothing at all, right? Well, yeah. She did confess to it. Whether that was to try and plea bargain down or not is another matter.
Right.
But you cannot square with me the fact that she called up. And I did look into the story on this. I read a story. This wasn't like hard copy or one of the tabloid shows. You know, we talked about how the tabloids have progressed. It used to be like National Enquirer.
Right.
Then it becomes like a current affair and hard copy and trashy shows like that. Like Bill O'Reilly makes his bones on a current affair, just like dishing gossip about celebrities.
TMZ. TMZ is And now very TMZ popular.
Is what,
oh, man,
is they what are. All of that is.
And
right?
It's crazy because TMZ, they get the scoops in ways where I'm like, whoa. I mean, most news reporters do, but TMZ is another big one.
Well, they're very specialized in that, like, we're right. going to deal with, like,
I think
this, like, celebrity culture and often scandal, but not always scandal. A lot yeah. of it will be like, this person's, did like, such dating such. This person.
You know? Everybody's heard World Star. And honestly, World Star has become real famous. I don't know. Yes, I haven't heard yes. a lot of stuff, but, you know, people are like, World Star.
I mean,
like,
I knew of World Star because of all the street fights that they were filming, mm-hmm. right?
Like, yeah.
And it wasn't something I was looking for, but it would always come up. It would just come out of nowhere.
And it would be
feeds.
These celebrities throwing down, and you're like, what?
Well, I mean, they started out by just having, like, that's putting true. Street fights in. Yeah. And then as they got more popular, they started to branch out.
So, not that we're talking about this, but the one I remember was the one where the friend. grabbing the friend by the ponytail and she's dragging her through the streets. Sorry, I know it's not that funny, but it's not supposed to be. But they ended up being friends and the girl was dragging her through the street. And that was a whole World Star thing, I'm pretty sure. Or TMZ. Yeah. It was one of them.
The point that I was leading to, there was this report that she called up this journalist and was asking when Nancy Kerrigan was practicing. And then later said that it was off of a bet for 50 cents. Come
and
on,
50
dude.
Cents,
I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. I've never been able to square that part of it. So I don't believe her. Like straight I up, mean, I don't believe it. This is not blaming the victim for things. This is just this is looking just at this hardcore.
Seeing
because I usually
see.
Believe the victim over the perpetrator. And I do think Jeff Galooly was the one who hatched this entire thing. But I think she knew about it. And I think she was okay with it. And it's debatable whether she thought that they would pull it off or not. But that doesn't make it okay.
I mean, I agree. And I think the part with Sean and her and Jeff all sitting at the rink and she's like, I have other to think about and like calls Sean out for being, you know, whatever. And like, he's, you know, basically,
I mean, he
away.
Was a buffoon. There's no getting
oh, God,
over it.
Sean.
I mean, I love that they actually show the clip of him making the claims of like some magazine that
yeah,
was like,
that
quoting.
Was not there. I don't know why. Like, okay. So for be honest, you guys, people in these movies, like we've heard it, like Rosemary's Baby stuff that we've seen. I cannot stand characters like this. And he's a real person. So that's even what makes me yeah. even more.
He died 15 years ago.
But he gives me Tiger King, the dude at the end that's on the jet skis. Oh, you yeah. just freaking hate him.
Like everybody involved in this is pretty
it's
hateable.
Pretty hateable. I even
reasons.
Really am not like a Tonya Harding.
And I feel bad for Nancy Kerrigan. I went and rewatched Nancy Kerrigan immediately after she got batted in the knees because there's a television crew there documenting her practicing.
Right.
And
yeah.
apparently Sean went up behind her and then like hit her with that collapsible baton.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started filming her and she's yelling the why. Now it's not her yelling why that so much brings up my heckles, which it did with a lot of people, quite right. frankly, but it was the fact that she's like crying and then she does this quick glance up at the camera and then proceeds to cry harder. And that's
right.
the part where I'm like, oh man, like anybody who like doesn't think that people's behavior changes when a camera's on them,
mm-hmm.
they should see that.
Well,
they should watch that clip and really think about it because
yeah.
she did acknowledge there was a camera there and then cry even harder, which I'm absolutely sure it hurt and I'm not blaming the victim, but there is that aspect of the spectacle there that is really hard to ignore.
And I mean, I saw some of that. I'm not gonna lie. I try not to laugh at sometimes because when you see the camera thing, I'm just like, okay, hold yourself. Don't laugh too hard. Is she doing it for the camera or is she embarrassed now because she's going, why? You know,
that's an excellent point. Yeah.
Is there some points where she is literally like she didn't want the camera on? But here's where I will say that could be argued is if I don't want the camera on me, I'm doing this. I'm like
covering yourself up.
Don't
yeah.
look at me. Like that's kind of what I want because I'm embarrassed. embarrassed, like things are going on. And come to find out, what I did read is that her leg was not broken.
No,
and it was severely bruised.
Okay, so it was a medical thing. For
it was
sure.
A medical
she couldn't
thing.
She couldn't go in the championship. Like, you're doing like crazy athletic stuff. Like, if you have this giant bruise that like actually injures
that
you,
injures
like you're not going to be able to compete.
Absolutely.
So that's why she's held out in nationals. But the way it was reported, and I think so much of this is on the media, and I think it's really good that they're holding a light up to it in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's where I think this feminist angle that people are taking, where they're saying they gave her the raw deal. And I think in certain aspects they did. But the media made everything out to be so much more hardcore than it was. And I heard that she had kneecapped her and broke her knees. Like, that was the story that I heard.
Yeah, that's like, what
everybody
heard. Like, at
the time. And then I remember not really paying attention to it. And then I was like, how is she skating in the Olympics? Like,
exactly.
I was absolutely floored because, like, to my knowledge, she had gotten her knees broken.
And I love in the movie, they show that part where they're like, well, you might as well have thought I've done it myself. And she's got like the blood on her face. Like, yeah. Like, for real, it really did seem like it made it seem like people did bring that out. But social media did take a lot of effect, or the news even. I don't really even want to say. I guess it was social media.
No. There was no social media back in the,
yeah,
in
okay,
the,
so
in
it
the
was
90s.
Just, it was news.
Yeah,
hearsay.
I mean, the internet was hardly a thing at that point.
Exactly.
And it definitely was not a democratized thing at that point.
They had Oregon Trail.
Yeah. I mean, Oregon Trail was a dusty game at that point. But
I couldn't think of anything that was like computer.
I mean,
Oregon
Trail.
Yeah,
Oregon Trail is like an 80s game. Like early 80s.
Yeah.
Like green screen.
It was some
DOS.
Kind of something, everyone. I don't know what I'm talking about. No,
it's like
talking.
Super Mario Brothers, the first one.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Maybe Super Mario World.
Yeah, Super Mario World 3. They're like, was there Super Mario World 3? Where it could be a feminist. It was a come up story in a way. She went through the trials and tribulations. The story's over with in a way. We remember it how we remember it. People see it how they've seen it. But also, we don't know what really is the truth.
We truly don't. I mean, we know some facts. There are some facts for the case. For example, fact, she called a journalist and found out what Nancy Kerrigan was practicing. That is a cold, hard fact. And that's what collapsed everything on her.
Yep.
With her figure skating and everything. But I do want to say the media got increasingly trashy after this event. Like, it was happening. Your hard copies in A Current Affair, they would take stuff like Amy Fisher. They called her the Long Island Lolita. And like,
oh,
Joey Buttafuoco, he was paying her because she was like a 16-year-old prostitute. And then she ran up and shot his wife in the face later. Like, that was a big thing that
Holy
hard copy
shit.
And A Current Affair were always covering. And what are they doing now? And all of that kind of stuff. You know, like, utter sleaze. But what happened with Tonya Harding is the national media paid attention because this was an Olympic story. Like, this
was when
the Olympics were still a huge, huge deal. Not like they are now in this country. It's a prominent sports story, but it's not like a huge story. Like, the Olympics at that time captured everything in our society when it happened. It was a really big
deal.
Well,
and if you think about it, like, when people say, oh, there was nothing to do back then, it was like, well, yeah, you went outside and did things. And then, like, at night you watched stuff, the upcoming news.
I mean,
that was
whenever people say there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
What I always think about is many, many times when I was a kid, I would like lay on my bed and just throw a tennis ball against the wall and bounce it back into my hand. And I would do that sometimes for an hour, just thinking about things because I was bored of all my books and there was nothing on TV. Like,
right.
When I hear there's nothing to do, that's the kind of thing I think.
There
was still stuff to do. It was just,
but it was just,
you didn't have a screen in your face.
Exactly. And so
that's
now,
the difference.
Now when people, and that's why I hear that. And then I'm like, but like, you know, something like that comes out.
Right.
You know what
but
I mean?
But like, so that happens. The media at large really gloms onto that. And then shortly thereafter, because this is 94, like around wintertime. And then if I'm remembering right, around June is when OJ is in the white Bronco and gets pulled over. And that becomes a giant story. And this time period of 94 is when the media starts to transform to where they get in on the juicy gossip too.
Right.
You know, it becomes all about OJ. That dominates the news for the next year and a half. This is the transformational part. Like, it starts with Tonya Harding, then it goes to OJ. And they even mention it when they have Bobby Cannavale playing the hard copy guy. And he's talking about how they cover all this trashy stuff. And he's like, you know, like the news now.
Oh,
but
dude.
He mentions OJ. And it's like, yeah, that was all a part of this. Is like, that is the demarcation moment. Like, Tonya Harding opens the door and then OJ like just swings it open and
good
it
Lord.
Stays
well,
open.
And that was a huge
that.
Thing. Well, and the funny thing is the I don't really believe or trust social media. like a lot.
I mean, you shouldn't if you're a thinking person,
you know? And like, so like you hear things on like the news and the stuff he was saying, like, oh yeah, you know, go flatten her tires or get her, you know, get her. Yeah, yeah.
He flattened her tires so that she would have to be out there.
Yeah. To get
so that they could try and get the image and like an interview with her.
And that is so crazy to me because I really do think people do that. And it's sad.
Oh, I think they definitely did that then. And I'm sure to a degree it happens now.
Yeah. And then out of nowhere, am I supposed to believe this or not? And that's in this movie, and it really tells a lot, I feel like, in a way of like, you kind of got some dirty details on just insight, especially on the media stuff, on the news. And when you hear stuff like that, like, I actually, like, when he said that, I was kind of like, what the? So you did? Okay. All right. I mean, I get it. You got to get your stuff and your pictures and your story, but it's so slimy.
Let's jump into the synopsis of this movie. Lavanna takes Tanya, who is a soft four, to an ice skating coach, Diane Rawlinson, to train. She expects her to be able to become good enough to have a career when she grows up, soon after Tanya's dad leaves the family. So we get the makings of Tanya Harding here, right? Like, you see the mom, she's smoking a cigarette on the ice. She's kind of ignoring what the coach is trying to tell her and being like, no, my daughter, she'll be good at this. Like, she'll be able to have a career. And she's right, but also she says there's no smoking on here. And she goes, I'll smoke quietly.
Yeah, I'll smoke quietly. And that's the thing, is like, and anytime you hear where a mom just, and I'm not saying this, actually any parent, when you're just kind of blatantly cussing on the eyes, oh, you're going to be that mom. Okay, yep. I'm in for it. Let's see what happens.
This is a classic type of parent who takes it way too seriously and is forcing their kid into the sport.
Yeah. Mind you, who has never done it before.
Right. And when you look at the greats in sports, most of the time, it's not a parent that's forcing them into it. You do get that story, but most of the time, that's not what the actual story is, because it tends to be kids who are very athletic and then they do other sports and then they find the sport they really love. And now they're able to incorporate these other things into it.
Exactly.
You know, like that's typically what happens. Like LeBron did not have a parent, for example, who was like pushing him to be a great basketball player. You get somebody like Hakeem Olajuwon, for example, didn't even play basketball until right before he was drafted. And he was a big soccer player. But because he was a big soccer player, when he goes into basketball, he's got all this footwork that's amazing because he had all this experience with soccer. So he's able to like take this other thing into the sport that he legit loves when he finds it, right?
And like blend it, you know what I mean?
That is the recipe for actual success.
Exactly.
You occasionally get somebody who breaks through in pro sports who has the parent forcing them to do it and using the stick, not the carrot. That is the outlier to the story because those kids tend to burn out and they're not super happy with what they're doing.
Yeah, because they're too busy. They're not doing it for them anymore. They're doing it for their family and they're for that person.
Yeah.
We'll call it like we see it. That abusive person.
We see that in a way with Tanya Harding because later in the story, she just couldn't execute her landings when she's in the 92 Olympics. And I think she placed fourth. They're also showing you the little clips of her out partying and drinking.
And yeah,
she came in overweight. I think they mentioned that. But that was a story. Like at the time, that's why she has that attitude in a way is because she gets pushed her entire life. And so, you know, subconsciously you start to push back.
Where do you think she gets that? It's not my fault. Because throughout the movie, it seems like her mom holds her up to a lot of things in a way. But like, you know what I mean? Like, there's points where she's just like, this was not working. So it wasn't my fault. I mean, I tried the best that I could, you know?
It's complicated with Tanya Harding because I do think a lot of things are not her fault. So I don't want to come out strong on the other side.
Yes.
That being said, I think people who are not reflective on their own lives always come out on the it's not my fault. And I think reflective people think about the ways in which they could have done something differently or handled something differently. Mm-hmm. And they tend to say, I wish I had done this, but this was happening and this was happening. And I just didn't make a correct decision. You know,
right.
Tanya Harding has never done that. Like she has always been very, very defiant in any interview I've seen from back then, before then, after the whole incident to today, she's just always defiant. She's not very self-reflective, it seems like.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where it comes from.
I was curious. And again, I don't think a lot of stuff was her fault either. It was extended from things that just not knowing or not being educated in that way that she wasn't supposed to do things the right way. And who knows, anything is not really the right way to do it anymore because Well, it just isn't. I don't even know how to explain that. Like, sometimes it's just not the right way. And so watching her, the only reason I asked that is because I did, like, watch some of the interviews with her mom, and, like, the mom is so in denial about everything.
She's so awful, to the point where she's like,
that lady that's playing me, that's not me. I didn't look like that. And you clearly go back and look, that is her.
That whole thing with the parrot on her shoulder, that's right from an interview. If you watch interviews with her in the 80s and 90s, she's just terrible, and you can tell. And she probably had a PR person and was, like, very prepared to, like, tackle. Yeah. This isn't me. I mean, after all, it's an Oscar-winning performance like, playing her. So, yes, I totally understand her being on the defensive, but I don't believe her. Tonya Harding
was happy. She was like, I watched the interview, and she goes, the interviewer goes, so what did you think about the mom? Yes, she did so good. I was like, whoa. And then you kind of, like, felt bad for a minute because you're like, all right, the mom's saying she's not like that. And then Tonya goes, well, she never beat me with the hairbrush. You know, she goes, she hit me with the hairbrush. And the mom goes, okay, look, I never hit my kids.
Okay, but I want to be clear. Allison Janney is amazing in this movie. She's so good. And I'm telling you, from watching old interviews with the mother, she was a lot like that.
She was a lot like that.
And that performance is tailored from those interviews.
She hit her with that hairbrush. And the mom's most likely. I never hit her. And then she's like, okay, there was that one incident that I did beat her in the thing with the hairbrush.
And they show one incident in the movie, but it's mostly psychological abuse that she's doing.
And a couple,
right?
Like, little thumps, you know, in the head.
Oh, yeah, I guess there is a couple little light slaps, stuff like that, which is not okay. Yeah. But, like, I feel like it was mostly mental abuse that she was, is still abuse.
Yeah, and she says, okay, and when I hear someone go, oh, yeah, I used to whoop my children, my mom would be like, oh, yeah, I whoop my kids, but
this is
like,
also a woman who is aware that a camera's on her and the world is watching.
Did you watch the one where she's in the outfit
with the parrot?
Not that one. There's another one. She doesn't have the parrot on her, but she is dazzle bedazzle, man. She is just sparkles everywhere, and she's got this weird headpiece on, and I'm like living for it. I'm like, holy crap, girl, you dressed for this. And everything she says, she's very much in denial about a lot of things. She is abusive. Yeah. But also, through these interviews, everything is a lie. Or if it's not a lie, it's sugar-coated. You know what I mean?
Yes. Put it in her perspective. There's something else I should have mentioned up top. My mom, huge figure skating fan, like, just watches the crap out of it all the time. We're from Portland. Like, when I was a kid, we saw Tonya Harding practice because we used to go to the Clackamas Town Center Mall all the time. And Portland, it's this huge mall.
Right.
And in the middle, they had an ice skating rink. I guess it's not there anymore. But Tonya Harding, because she was, you know, not rich, would practice in front of all of these people. So she had that extra layer of difficulty because even when she's practicing, there's people watching her and taking photographs of her and things like that. So back in the 80s, when she was a teenager, we actually did see her practice for a little bit. I didn't want to watch because I was bored because I was a kid.
Well,
you know?
It's ice skating,
but my mom was like, there's Tonya Harding. She's a really good figure skater, you know?
Ooh, that's crazy.
And my mom was like a huge Tonya Harding fan. My mom was in Tonya Harding's corner until she wasn't. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and that was kind of how Portland is. Like, Portland's a big city, but it's also has a chip on its shoulder for not being one of the biggest cities. And so for a long time, I feel like until Portlandia kind of gave it a different reputation, it had a giant chip on its shoulders, especially when it came to sports and its heroes, you know?
Right.
Like, we always felt like we were getting the short shrift from the national media with the Blazers. And, like, Tonya Harding was right along that thing. It was always like, oh, well, she doesn't have her own facility to practice in, and she's not, like, handed things like all the other ice skaters are. So they were very much in her corner for a long time.
Yeah.
Once again, that changes as, like, things come out.
As you start to watch.
Yeah, but that was definitely a thing. Something else I want to mention from this opening scene is, like, her father leaves, and then he's out of this movie at that point. Like, completely absent. And I went back and actually found out that when she started dating Jeff Galooly, it's actually her dad that was taking her on the dates with him because they were both teenagers. So, like, the dad wasn't completely absent, but I'm sure was largely absent.
And they never, you know? And that's the one thing I don't like.
I just think
about...
it's easier to just establish he's out of the picture because he probably largely was, but I don't think he was completely out of the picture.
Yeah, which I think it's hard because then it doesn't really become not a true story, but also it kind of puts him in a bad light. in a way.
It's also, once again, this is from their perspectives, right? This is from Jeff and Tanya's perspective.
I guess so, that's true too.
So like, we have to keep that in mind, and they let you know at the beginning of the movie again. So people do not watch this and think this is the true story. It's not.
It's not.
And they're upfront about it at the beginning of the movie. That's what's so frustrating. It's like watching some people who don't have knowledge of it or kind of forgot things.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, oh yeah, she got handed a terrible thing. It's like, yeah, but there's way more stuff.
I just feel like you can better yourself. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm doing it now. You know what I mean?
You're following this movie with two unreliable narrators.
Here, pretty much.
When Tanya is 15, she becomes one of the best figure skaters in the country. She is limited in her scores, however, because her sparkly homemade outfits and choices in music. She starts dating Jeff Galuli. He immediately becomes abusive and they marry shortly after. Later, Lavona tells Tanya that she shouldn't put up with the abuse. Tanya blames her mother for raising her that way. The outfits and the music, that was really a thing. And that was when I talk about like Portland backing her 100% to that point. That was one of the things, was they were like pointing out this narrative that like she's white trash or whatever. And so she's not this princess on the ice and she's not this rich person. Like there was this real thing behind it. This backing of people for her that were like, she's more like a common person. You know, it wasn't straight up like Nancy Kerrigan is a princess and deserves everything. That's like part of the narrative, but it's not the whole narrative. The other part of the narrative is like, here's your working class hero. Exactly. That was how the media originally positioned this stuff, is like, it's the working class hero versus the super graceful princess. Like that was typically what we got between it. It just became a trashier narrative as things spun out of control.
Exactly. And it's crazy because like she says in there, like they were friends, they were doing stuff, you know what I mean? And so it's like,
I don't know how much that's true.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, because like, Nancy Kerrigan, for example, said that Tanya Harding never apologized. And if you were a friend,
like you would be like, hey girl. But also it's hard to say because again, we're talking about this movie and you can't really believe everything, and you can't don't believe want to.
Hardly anything. And in so this it's movie. Like,
I don't, you know what I mean? I don't know. And it's a good movie. This is a really good movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. But like, here's what I like from biopics.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of a stale movie format for the most part. I like it when they do something interesting because it's never going to be the true story. It's just not. You're trying to fit somebody's life into a movie and you can't honestly do that. Well, you're making something fake and trying to like mirror the real life in some way.
Yeah.
And so when you boil it down, it's always false on some level. And well, this movie's at least
definitely one.
Right. Yes. But this movie is trying to be upfront, and by having these two narratives there, it's like they're addressing that because they're letting you know you can't trust these people.
Yeah.
And by the way, this movie got raked over the coals in the press when it came out, purely because they were like, why are we giving these people a microphone? Totally understand. Like,
I
totally understand why they say it. I was okay with it because at the end of the day, when I went to watch the movie, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, they're addressing that you can't trust these people right up front. Mm. You know, like, yeah.
And I'm so just, to I'm me, just it's nosy, like, what's the problem? I wanted to know what really happened, you know? And like, that's what I'm saying, like, watching this movie, Margot Robbie did a freaking amazing job. I was thinking this on my way. I was like, she did Tanya Hardy good.
She does a good acting job, except in one area. Her accent slips constantly. Mm. And the accent she's doing is not what Tanya Harding sounded like at all. Yeah. She never at any point sounds like Tanya Harding.
I watched it.
It's just like,
no,
she sometimes slips slightly Australian, but even when she doesn't, she's doing more of a Minnesota accent than like, quite frankly, kind of a redneck thing, which like Tanya Harding didn't actually sound kind of redneck. She just sounded non-regional dialect. Yeah. Like when I went back and listened to interviews with her now and then, she just sounds like a non-regional accent.
I didn't
accent.
Know she was supposed to have an accent, period. So I didn't.
I mean, she's got a non-regional American accent. Exactly. That's what
I didn't think
is.
She was supposed to. And like I did. So I watch with subtitles, everyone. Subtitles always, you catch things. I like watching with subtitles. It makes my night. But I did catch a few things where she would say things and I was like, and I didn't know she was doing that. She said she meant to say failing and she said frailing. And I don't know if they did that due to her nerves or if Margot Robbie's messed that up or if Tony Hardy actually
said I'm sure
that.
They could have gotten another take if they didn't intentionally do it.
Right. Yeah. Know? Yeah, you're right. That could be.
I mean, I don't know, but I would imagine.
That or they were
it
like,
it was
yeah,
probably
screw this.
Intentional when they did it. Right. I will say, too, Sebastian Stan is really good. I didn't realize he was playing Jeff Galooly until after I finished the movie the second time. And I was like, oh, like something about that mustache completely threw me off. And I was like, that's the Winter Soldier. I had no idea.
Oh my gosh, you just opened my eyes. I did not know that's who that was either. What? My eyes just widely open. I did not know that. Okay, we're good.
The other thing is like when she gets married to Jeff Galooly, she sees her mom and she's just bathed in darkness in this hallway down an alley, yeah. Which like reminded me of all the weddings I went to as a kid. Because all the weddings I went to would always have that like almost, I don't know, like crisscrossing fence thing
yeah.
in the background. It would always be in like a hotel, you know, where there's like a whole bunch of rooms or it's like in a municipal center yeah. or something. Because we didn't have a lot of money.
And
so
the
like,
coffee was there and you got the little hors d'oeuvres, you know.
And the fact that she's out in that hallway and then she just said, you screwed up. You don't marry stupid. It's like, that's her wedding day, yeah, dude. I know Jeff Galooly's awful, but also like,
dang. And the way. She said, you only f- stupid. You don't marry stupid. I was just like, and like Tanya says nothing. She's just like, good on you. Walk away.
Yeah. Tanya gets in an argument with Diane about her outfit and hires Dottie Teachman in her place. Tanya becomes the first American female figure skater to have two triple axel jumps executed flawlessly during her competition. She quickly divorces her husband. Tanya enters the 92 Olympics and messes up her landings, failing to medal. She takes a job as a waitress and decides to retire. Diane finds her and convinces her to try again since the Winter Olympics were moved to 94. That was a big story too because they felt like the Summer Olympics were always getting all the oxygen, mm-hmm. which they were. I mean, figure skating was a big thing. And then occasionally you would get a hockey story or something, but like right. that stuff, the second the Summer Olympics happened, everything with the Winter Olympics just like left the public consciousness. And
like,
so they were like, let's put it in the off year. So that's when they moved it. So gotcha. For somebody like Tanya Harding or Nancy Kerrigan, they're right in their prime and all of a sudden they're getting another crack at it. You know, like that's a huge, huge deal to right. be able to just get that 2 year gap and then just jump right back in. So yeah, that would be something Tanya Harding wouldn't be able to resist because if you're in an Olympics, there's a very good chance as a figure skater, you're not going to be able to get in another Olympics. What you have to do for a figure skater is you have to be little. Like that's just a thing. And you have to be extremely thin and mm-hmm. athletic. And you just get this teeny tiny window where that's actually going to be the case. And you get more cases of like anorexia and things like that with the athletes than I would think any other sport.
Which is hard because I feel like anorexia, you're not really building mass in your body to get muscle. So then that way, right. you know what I mean? So,
but the heavier you are, the harder it is to do these things with skating. Like Tanya Harding, I don't want to like just jump over this. That triple axel that she could do, that was a real thing. Like
yeah.
to date, there's only been 6 female figure skaters who have ever been able to pull off a triple axel, mm-hmm. period.
And it was her
like,
signature.
Not just in competition, just period. And
yeah,
she would do them in pretty much every event. Like it was incredibly impressive. And that's again where she derivated from Nancy Kerrigan was Nancy Kerrigan was incredibly graceful.
But she wasn't.
You know, and I don't mean this like saying that Tanya Harding wasn't. I just mean that she absolutely moved fluidly.
Yeah.
But Tanya Harding was so athletic. The fact that she could pull off those triple axels, and it wasn't just that. She did other things. Like,
yeah.
You looked at Nancy Kerrigan and you think of like somebody in ballet, and you look at Tanya Harding and you're like, that's an athlete.
Right.
And the fact is, both of them had elements of the other, or mm-hmm. they wouldn't have been able to compete in that to begin with.
They were in the Olympics. Point blank, period. They made it to where they were supposed to because they worked hard.
Tanya Harding doesn't yeah. just do that triple axel, and they outline this. In yeah. there, she does an extra half turn every time she does the triple axel. Like at some point, there was a male athlete who could do the quadruple axel, and that was insane. And I don't think a female athlete's been able to pull that off yet, but like that's like super insane. But the fact that she was able to do 3 and then a half on top of it, so she could almost do a quadruple axel,
like she was about there. Well, and I think
she was in a class alone.
Something just came out where an ice skater just broke some kind of record. It was a female. the fact with her outfit, because you brought that up too, is like her outfits, the stuff they did, stuff was rigged. It was to better that other person, or sometimes it was favorited because of who that person was and how they proceeded now,
this is where it's themselves. Absolutely fact and not opinion, I think, is that the deck really was stacked against Tonya Harding in that she could not train in a private facility. Once again, like ice skating in a public mall to do all of her practicing. She didn't have the money for the outfit. She was sewing her own outfits. All of this stuff is true, and it was absolutely an advantage for everybody else. Like Tonya Harding was alone having to deal with that in the U.S.
And when you would think that her working hard to do that, that they would see that. And that's where
they didn't care, though.
They didn't.
It's very elitist.
And the guy, and someone says that to her later on, but like a lot of that stuff, I felt bad for her because I was like, geez, like she can't catch a break. And it's like, dang, this messes with your scores versus, you know, them actually just kind of giving an opinion, you know?
Yeah. During the competitions leading up to the Olympics, she executes well, but still gets bad scores. She follows a judge up to his car and he admits that her skating is good. She's just not wholesome enough. After all, she'd be representing the country. Tonya reconciles with Jeff, thinking it might help her image. So that's like a little line that we kind of skirted over. But Tonya, as soon as she's preparing for the 92 Olympics and she wins that, I think it's nationals, she is suddenly emboldened by that. And so she leaves Jeff Galuli, which is great. You know, like, screw that guy. He's absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And they have this really funny scene where he's arguing with her on the phone, and it's the old corded phones.
And the-
so he's like in another room in an armchair, like yelling at her. And then she hangs up on him. And then he says to his friend, like, have your mom redial. And so she's like, okay. And like, Sean's redials yelling, on the
mom,
phone.
Mom, redial the number again. Yeah. Call that number
and again. And he calls it again, and she hangs up. And he's like, one more time. And then he calls again, and she hangs up. And then he like jumps in a truck and goes all the way over to the competition and then yells back at her and walks out.
Yeah.
And that helps like set up
whatever.
Yeah. After she leaves him, he's threatening to kill her and then kill himself. And this is also where they show like these two stories are conflicting, because she wrestles the gun away from him at one point and then takes a shot at him in the wall. And then she turns to the camera and says, I did not do this.
Yeah. And I was like, wait like a minute.
In the middle of the scene. Yeah. I love that so much. It's so funny.
And then it's like, what really happened? And then that part, that is scary, because in my mind, I wanted to actually believe that happened.
It did happen. Yeah. Okay. From what I understand. And that is just such an utter failing, because there was neighbors that knew about it. And then the cop came and pulled her over, and he had all the alcohol and the guns in his car. And then he walked away. I don't know that she was bleeding like they showed in that.
Yeah, did he shoot at her?
I don't know, but I do know that like they pulled him over and nothing came of it. And the police absolutely failed her many turns.
Honestly,
you know, and that's where I think that the feminist narrative comes in with this movie. I think people look at that stuff and yes, that's real. Like, and that's really holding a light up to something that
matters. The hard thing is we do, I hate saying it like this, just because a lot of stuff we're making aware of, but, and I don't know a way of any way of excusing abuse or police anything, but what I will say is now they're doing more thorough searches, you know. Back then
I think they do and they don't.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
Like I'll give you an example. If you're in a poorer neighborhood and something like that happens, cops may take forever to get there. A lot of the time somebody will even be convicted and then they'll come back home and have the situation where the person can still get in contact with their ex.
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
All of this stuff is messed up, and so it's still messed up. Are we better than we were in the 80s? Probably.
Sort of.
I don't know that that's like,
no, because
I don't
honestly,
know you deserve a medal for that because it was pretty awful.
Exactly. And I'll be honest, I told you, I watch a lot of law and crime and stuff like that. And the way people have gotten failed. I mean, I just watched something and this broke my heart. There's a girl and she's panicking and she's going, there's something happening. There's a person shooting at us and this and that. And my friend's bleeding out. And the dispatcher is literally like yelling at the lady, telling her to come home. She hangs up on the person.
That's
and the friend
so awful.
Died. The friend passed away. That could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
And that dispatcher, like, where I'm like, that kind of stuff, this was all about, like, that abuse and how you can even go back to your abuser and how abuse works. And it's really sad. And that's what made me feel bad for Tonya, because I've been through that. I've been back to my abusers, regardless if it was a relationship, a friend, family member. I've had all kinds of stuff happen. And so watching this story is a very big eye opener as to you cannot let your trauma from your childhood pass. It's you choose what you do with it. And she kept letting herself to go back, you know?
Yeah. Jeff receives a death threat towards Tanya before the regional championships, and the police say there are too many people and can't protect her. Jeff talks with his friend Sean Eckhart about sending a death threat to Nancy Kerrigan to get in her head. Sean says he knows a guy and then drops his name. And yeah. Jeff suggests that the letters be sent in Massachusetts to take the heat off of them. Later, Tanya makes a call and finds out when Nancy is training. When they say they can't protect at the Nationals, I'm just like, why?
Right. Because
I went to so many concerts and things of that nature afterwards where they're just searching people before you walk in. Why can't you do that? Like, that's ridiculous. I don't know if that's real or not.
And
but
again, I don't know.
I know Tanya Harding didn't compete in that particular event because of it.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, doing a pat down, that's one thing, or having the, what are those, metal detectors and stuff like that. I get it. But again, not trying to say it from now to then, but times, you know, I felt like maybe times back then, even it wasn't.
I know when Nancy Kerrigan got kneecapped, they had a detail following her around to make sure she was okay. Yeah, of course they did.
I don't know anything, y'all. Like, I listen.
No. Don't feel bad about it. Like, they had a detail, dude. You should have done this. You're the police. You should have done this. And you're talking about a national figure. How do you not pick that up as a priority? And
I'm not saying, hey, they shouldn't have done that. I'm just saying, I feel like the sense of awareness, like, to where we are now from back then, like,
it's not that long ago. You know what I mean?
How long ago was it?
Like, well, this would have been 94. So it was like 30 years ago.
Yeah, but 30 years, you change.
No, I'm telling you, I was alive then. This stuff happened. No, I know. Like, somebody would get a death threat, and then they had somebody, you know, from the cops, like, protecting them a lot of the time. Like,
yeah,
that's true. It's a trope in movies, even. It's ridiculous. Well,
listen, I don't know anymore.
It's not like we thought of patting down people after September 11th. They were patting down people before September 11th.
It is so hard because I think my brain right now is in the fact that, like, we're bringing awareness to things that have already been aware to, you know,
yeah.
aware to. And so, like, I'm thinking with a weird non-millennial brain right now.
No, it's okay. It's okay because I am Gen X. I'm a little bit older. Like, I'm not super
and
you, older.
And honestly,
I do have a little more perspective for how stuff was back right. then. I'm telling you, man, they should. Like, the police just failed her.
I was four when this stuff was going down. I guess because I'm seeing this a lot, it has nothing to kind of do with it. But, like, we're bringing a lot of stuff back. Like, oh, we are bringing stuff back from the 80s where, like, people are making that a whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, but this has always been a thing, you know? And so I guess I see your point. Like, well, no, they could have done these things and done it this way. But
there's this interesting view from history where there are things where people are like, you should have done this, and they're right, but also sometimes you're like, but you're not taking the context of history in.
Right.
And then there's the other thing where people will excuse it because they say it's a different time, and it's like, no, it wasn't okay then either, which is, once again, not taking the context of the time.
Yeah, I've really tried not to say it was okay. I'm just saying, it made it seem like they didn't really care.
Because,
you know, like,
guess what? Police don't always have your best interests at heart.
I
know that's got to be shocking to you.
It's not, we won't talk about it. Well, you can kind of.
Dude, by the way, like, I'm a white dude. They don't always have my best interests in heart either.
No, trust me. But I've been there. I told you, I've had cops follow me. I mean, not too long ago, I was pulling up to my job and had a dude follow me, turn around, do all this stuff. And I was like, what am I doing?
Follow me to the grocery store, wait until I got back from the grocery store, and then followed me home because I had out-of-state plates about 12 years ago.
So,
and because I had Washington plates because I just moved back from Washington, he thought it was okay to basically stalk me because obviously I was going to be a drug dealer or something.
And they cannot do that. Like,
yeah, it's just the police don't always have your best interests at heart.
Well, I've even seen it lately. Like, they have their lights off, and I didn't think an officer could do that. I thought it was entrapment, but lately I've been watching stuff. I'm like, really, that's a thing where you can have your actual lights off at night, and if the you know, if you don't see that cop, they can pull you over. I thought they had to have their lights on. That's just my opinion, my thing, I guess, or an opinion, but yeah, they don't have to have them on.
Sean hires two thugs. One waits in the car as a getaway while the other finds Nancy and strikes her with a collapsible baton. She screams out to a camera crew, why, as Sean makes his way out of the building. The front doors are locked, so he headbutts the glass and goes through it, getting to the car. Nancy is unable to compete in the nationals, and the two men are quickly arrested. I do want to say that dude literally did
headbutt
the window and then go through it. Like, he actually did that because he got stuck. And I don't, dude, your head, really? Like, that's you have crazy. A collapsible baton. Why are you using your head?
Yeah.
This is the caliber of people they hired.
He pulls the baton out. In the movie, he pulled the baton out. I don't know if that was really true, but why?
It is.
So
yeah,
he pulled the baton out. So in real life,
he said that he waited until the camera crew wasn't filming her to strike her. So he didn't even wait for them to leave. He just waited until they weren't filming her. Yeah, because
she was behind a curtain, and then I guess he went through the curtain, and that's when he struck.
Yeah, he came up behind her and then hit her in the kneecaps and ran off. And that's when she looked up at
the camera and cried harder. But anyway, so...
And I think they nabbed them, like, the next day. Or maybe it was 2 days later.
But... Yeah, because it says in the movie, it wasn't long after. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
It was pretty quick.
It was fast.
They got busted pretty quick.
I mean, they didn't sound like the smartest of criminals. They were
not the smartest of criminals.
I mean, he smashed the window, the door in with his head.
Sean brags about the incident, which leads to the FBI interrogating him. He blames Jeff and wears a wire to try and get him to confess. Tanya qualifies for the Olympics and goes to the FBI to report what Jeff and Sean did. The FBI then shows her transcript to Jeff. He races to her house to confront her, and she talks with him through the door, sneaking out the window. Jeff tells the FBI she had knowledge ahead of time of the attack. Jeff is like talking to Sean. He's like, "Are you talking to people?" He's like, "I didn't." And they just show this montage of him in bars.
I'm talking to like 10 different people.
Yeah, and he's like, "I'm responsible for that attack." Yeah. And then the FBI tracks him down from him talking, and then he's literally talking.
Literally snitches. And the hard thing with Sean that I dislike definitely
everything about him.
Thing for him was it's all fun and games until someone gets hurt. Dead serious. Like,
and he thought, I don't know if he said this in real life, but in the movie, he thought that he was masterminding this thing because he kept saying he was Tonya Harding's bodyguard, which she adamantly refused to acknowledge. And I've heard that is true. He would refer to himself as her bodyguard, and she never hired him as a bodyguard. No. Wanted to drum up this business because he was starting this bodyguard business. And so he thought that this would like...
He even says it in
employ
there.
Employ everybody.
Like, yeah, he's like, yeah. And like, not even... like, and in my mind, I'm thinking like, dude, you're an idiot. You're literally about to get caught by the cops. So you think taking out other athletes is the way to go? Yeah. Got it. You're a great bodyguard. And then you're like listening to him. He almost has this savior thing. Like,
dude, that guy is so funny.
I've done so great. He's so funny, but I was so mad at him because he's just like, wait, Jeff, let's just calmly do it. But I will say this, that part with him in the diner, I feel like everybody's had a point in their life where they've had that kind of fear, regardless of what it is, if you got in trouble, not in trouble, whatever. You said something. Watching him go through that whole thing, it was good.
And when he's recording it, and it's so obvious he's recording it because of the way he's talking, and
then
Jeff Galuli is trying to like say all this stuff conversationally to like get the FBI off of his tail.
Exactly.
Of course it's not going to work.
No, and Jeff is, and Sean is just sitting there, and he's just like, well, and I love when Jeff gets close to him and gets in his ear and is like, yeah, dude, this is what it's like. This is what you wanted. This is something you wanted. You wanted to be famous. You wanted to be someone's bodyguard. You had all these ideas of what it was going to be great, but now that it's actually a crime of what you did and you don't want to do jail time, now you want to backtrack.
Yeah. Press around Tanya's house and her mother shows up. She presses for details, but Tanya realizes that Lavona is recording the conversation. The men are all charged, but Tanya's hearing is postponed till after the Olympics. Tanya does not execute well at the event, crying that her laces were messed up. She places eighth and Nancy gets the silver. That image of her at the Olympics crying, I remember that, but it played so much different on TV at the time. And I rewatched the clip and like, they really do try and make you feel for Tanya in that movie. But I remember watching it. She like messed up some jumps. It was very clear she couldn't like finish her routine.
Right. right.
shouldn't bother anyway. And yeah. then she just came up like crying and stuff. Like it was the biggest spoil sport thing. So having her talking about how Nancy Kerrigan just looked disgusted when she got the silver medal, it's like, you didn't handle your eighth place thing well, even though she's trying to make it out like she did.
She goes, I wasn't being a poor sport in this one. And it's like, well, you kind of are. I mean, at the Not end kinda, of the day, dude. You she, are.
Like, she was a terrible sport at every turn.
And watching her talk to the judges, I said, girl, you were not crying. I do not see any stinking tears at all coming out your eyeballs right now. They look like crocodile tears to me.
Are you talking about with the laces?
The lace part,
in real life, she was definitely crying.
Was she crying?
Oh, yeah. Like, all over, dude. Her face got red and puffy, and there was, like, tears streaming.
Okay, all right. I was going to say, absolutely. I seen some of...
That was the most enduring image of this entire thing for me, was I remember watching that in the Olympics.
Because there's a part where they zoom in on her face, and again, who knows what someone's been looking like, what they've been crying. I can tell what someone's been crying, because I can tell when I've been crying, but...
Yeah, it's also a movie, you know, like, she's fake crying.
No, the actual interview.
Oh, gotcha.
The actual part, because I was watching it before I left, and the actual part where she's showing her straps, I saw her crying before that, which was fine, but the part where Margot Robbie was up on the movie, that's why I was like, oh, she did you justice there, Miss Tonya Harding, because really in that part, it didn't seem like she was very upset.
Yeah. Jeff admits he destroyed Tonya's career. He did 18 months in prison, never paid his fine, changed his name, opened a hair salon, and got married 2 more times. Tonya is banned from competitive figure skating. She begs the judge to reconsider. Forced to make ends meet, she goes into boxing. She now lives in Washington in the same area as her mother, but has no contact with her. She gets married twice and has a 7-year-old son. She wants people to know that she's a good mother. I love that they're like doing this wrap up with having them talk about their lives. Jeff's trying to talk about how he's like found this marriage and it's really good. He's like glossing over the fact there was a wife in between.
Right.
Same with Tonya Harding. Like she's glossing over she had a marriage in between. You
like,
know?
No.
I mean, whatever. People get divorced, but it's also like you're presenting something that's a little bit different from what happened.
Yeah.
And that boxing thing, I remember this so vividly because I don't know that she actually competitively boxed all but one time. But the one time that was really famous was it was a celebrity boxing thing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the beginnings of reality TV because you had Real World going on at this point.
Was she on Real World?
No, she was not.
Okay.
But Fox started to like put these specials on where it was like Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire and things like that. And it would be like a one-off, right?
Right.
And so they had this celebrity boxing thing and there was 3 cards and I cannot remember what the other 2 cards were, but I do remember Tonya Harding going up
against
and boxing.
Jones, wasn't it? I watched it right before I got here.
I can't remember who she was. I honestly can't remember.
It was an interesting
But I remember
fight.
it was definitely a thing that people were talking about because she was so villainized at the point that when she was boxing, it was a really big deal. Like that was the match that everybody cared about. I honestly can't remember if she won or not.
Well, and I watched, that's kind of why I was a little late. I was doing research before I got, I was like getting ready and I'm like watching and I did watch kind of some of the boxing match and like, I'll be honest, they were kind of throwing hands. They had the guards on and everything.
I mean,
but
you have to throw
you
hands.
You gotta
at
throw
boxing.
Hands. Yeah. Well, and I remember when the Kardashians did the celebrity boxing thing and they got actually like up, like a couple of them did. I remember Kim jumped in with some girl, that girl beat her up. So when I hear like celebrity reality stuff like that, I didn't think, you know, Tonya Harding and this girl were gonna go at it. And
no, it was a real boxing
they were
match.
Going, I was like,
I mean, not sanctioned, but it was real.
Yeah,
they were punching
it was real.
Each other.
And I'll be honest, I've like, so when I watch a boxing match, I want to, or MMA, or I even watch WWE. I'm some of my nerdy side, but watching that, I want to like feel it. And like, I watching Tonya kind of throw hands, I was like, Ooh. I was like, okay, she's actually hitting. That was pretty cool to watch. It was an eye opener to see her career from the ice skating to kind of doing something with, you know, that aggression. And I feel like Tonya Harding probably should have been a boxer all her life. But I didn't know she was a boxer. And I had actually forgotten that because...
And once again, I'm not sure if she did it more than once, but that one time, it definitely happened. It
she
was
had
definitely
a couple
a
matches.
Big deal.
There was a few matches that popped on. I know the one with the last name that it made, I mean, it was an SNL skit at one point.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Oh, I mean, like, Tonya Harding was firmly rooted as a villain in our pop culture at that point. I'm sure it happened in the 90s, or at least like 2000 at the latest.
Yeah. But. Well, and then she did, what, Dancing with the Stars? stars, but also it did speak volume as to who Tonya Harding was. I'm glad she married and had a son and was a good mother, is what they put in there. But like,
I mean, she says she's a good mother. Who knows? I have no idea.
I don't know. And seeing her now,
I will say having kids is one of those things where with some parents, you do want to be better for your kid and you really do try. I'll say it for myself. Like, you know, I did some wild stuff when I was younger and I legitimately stopped a lot of that stuff and became calmer because I knew I was going to be a dad.
I think we were talking about this the other day and I was like, well, maybe I should have a kid. And then
Well, no, I didn't want to get across the idea that I'm like saying you should have a kid so that you calm down. It's more.
But I actually understood that because I do watch reality TV and there's a lot of people who they were fighting and doing all these things, doing crazy stuff. And then it's hard to say that, you know, you see them become a parent and they do change. Even on reality TV, they become this whole, it's like a whole new world opens up for them, which is true. They haven't, they brought life into this
and
world.
And I don't think it happens to everybody very clearly. I think if you try to be a good parent, if you're legitimately trying and you're really thinking about it, I think every parent goes through things where they're like, I have to handle this differently. Because I don't think anybody is like born a perfect parent. Like you have to work at
They have to represent.
And you have to change yourself a little bit.
Exactly. And I think that's where she has to say, I hope she is a good mother. That's where I'm saying it's like she had to say like, oh, I'm a good mother. But it's like, that's the kind of thing where people are like, I'm a real person. I'm a real person. It's like, you don't have to tell me that. I'll hear it through your actions. I'll see it through your actions and hear it through your words. If I did something that messed up, you're going to tell me I messed up. That to me is you being real. Now, if you sugarcoat it and you're like, no, I mean, it didn't really happen. I'm going to think that you're not a real person because you're not being authentic with me. You're just hiding the fact that you don't want me to say something back to you.
Yeah.
I think that's where it kind of went with that. The reason I say that is because in the interviews with her mom, you see it with her mom. Her mom is like, well, I never hit my kids. I never did that. And then it's like, well, there was that one time I beat her with the hairbrush in the interview.
Can't help but give herself away.
Exactly.
I also love in this movie, you know, every time you see her, for lack of a better term, confessional kind of stuff, when she's got that parrot, there's this one part where the parrot is like crawling up her and she's like, stop that. Like it snaps at it. And that is the biggest laugh for me in the movie. Yeah. I just laugh so hard at that. It's just so funny, man.
Oh my gosh. And I love
like Allison Janney, we haven't talked about enough, but she's so funny in this movie.
And I think
she's so despicable too.
She is. And I think it's funny that you said we haven't talked about her much. And then it's like throughout the movie, there's a part where she goes, now I see my storyline's going away. So let's get back into it. I really want to think that she really did want to be a part of the spotlight. I really do believe her mom was nice to her and probably gave her all these opportunities when she was younger, but she never took them.
I 100% believe off of hearing her in interviews and hearing her talked about by Tonya and other people that she looked at Tonya Harding as a way out of the life she was in. I don't think she even looked at her daughter as somebody to love. I think she looked at her as an opportunity. I really do.
The cash cow.
Yeah.
That's what I see. And again, you see these interviews with her mom and I really believe that's who she was. And that, even to the point where she's like, that's not me. That doesn't even look like me. And it's like, dude, I like seeing her mom back then with the coat and that the ice rink. I was like, that is you. That is so you.
Yeah. I think there's like another image that really strikes me in this movie. And I just say this because we talk so much about the reality of what happened. We're trying to present this as a movie, not reality, you know.
Exactly.
But there's this one thing, and it's very much a movie moment, but it sticks out in my head so much. And it's when they're going through the stadium in the back and they're showing all the women in their super expensive outfits and, you know, they have trainers around them and all this stuff. And then you see Tonya in her sparkly outfit all alone and she's smoking a cigarette and then she just defiantly drops the cigarette and then uses her ice skate to like disconnect the cherry.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that's such a good encapsulation of what this movie is.
Yeah.
It's like Tonya Harding standing alone defiantly
and
like smoking a cigarette while you're supposed supposed to be training and like,
oh my goodness. Yeah. Doing these things. And it's funny because she was athletic and smoked cigarettes and
yeah.
And drank alcohol. And it's like, those were kind of, aren't those like two top number one things you probably really shouldn't be doing?
As no, you could do that in the '60s as an athlete. Yeah. Cause they were all like, it's so funny. You hear stories about, for example, the Boston Celtics locker room in the '60s and they were just smoking like crazy during halftime and stuff. Wake up, pop culture up by dying on the job. And I kinda like to be the one to tell you, girl, you may not to be. Oh yeah. A Cosmic Void was created by Alex Small and Jeremiah Perez. It's hosted by Alex Small and Xavier Cousins. Produced by Aaron Donaldson and Alex Small. The theme song Duke of New York A No. 1 was written by Dub Campbell and Greg Vivrette. The song is performed by Tonight We Ride. A Cosmic Void is a Redwood Sound Labs production. Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help...
All right.
Hear Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genre. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together, they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.